Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. We've got a decent show lined up for you tonight. I tell you, with the election season going, it gets harder and harder to do full preparation on the show and keep everything sane. But there's a lot going on, and there's plenty to talk about, and we'll get to it here in just a moment. But to start tonight, like we do every night, we're going to start with the random political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, when I'm elected, I'll make sure street gangs and media moguls cannot undermine our hard-working families. I love the generator. And tonight's random spurious correlation, for those new to the show or haven't heard before, we do this to prove that, or to show that causation and correlation are two entirely different things. Tonight's random correlation, or spurious correlation, is that the total gross merchandise volume of stuff sold on eBay correlates with motorcycle riders killed in a collision with a pedestrian or an animal for the years 2007 to 2010. Obviously, the people selling stuff on eBay did not lead to motorcycle riders killing or getting killed by people or animals running out in front of them. But that, again, is the point. It's to show that causation and correlation are two entirely different things, and correlation doesn't prove squat. Oh, let's see here. I guess we have to start tonight on kind of a sad note. I meant to mention this last week, and it kind of came in late, and I didn't really know what to do about it. But for those that don't know, Gurley Martin was a multiple-time candidate for statewide office. He ran as a Republican. He was one of the old paleoconservatives, and didn't agree with him on everything, but he was a nice, nice gentleman. Probably the biggest media splash he made was when he stormed the stage at the debate at which he wasn't invited to participate in, even though he was a legal candidate for office and was escorted out. Gurley Martin passed away 90 years old. He passed away on Friday, August 29th, and our condolences go out to his family. Again, those that didn't know Gurley Martin, you missed out. He was an interesting guy. As I said, I didn't agree with him on everything, but he was a very interesting guy, and, you know, the political realm is worse off for him being gone. Following up on what we talked about last week, T and their new debate criteria, the ACLU put out a letter on Friday basically condemning the new criteria. And it's pretty funny. The reaction from KET, I should say, is pretty funny. The ACLU put out a multi-page letter, and basically they explained that this new criteria was put together in a way that doesn't look very good, if nothing else. And I can tell you for a fact that, you know, we talked about this, what, last week or the week before, that these debates, the way this was set up, was wrong. And it's entertaining to see the KET is now saying that if they change their criteria, that would be subjective. We can't change it now, despite the fact that this version of the criteria that they're now using wasn't in existence until mid-July. So, whatever. It's definitely interesting to see this story continue to develop. And of course, there is more to this story, but being personally involved and knowing what's going on, unfortunately, I cannot give everything to you. Just know that the story is not over, and we'll just kind of leave it at that. But the ACLU did come out and condemn KET for this. KET did specifically draft these rules to keep candidates that aren't Democrat or Republican from ever participating during the discussions, as I mentioned last week.
One of the key things they figured out was, or tried to do, was make it so that they would have the flexibility, if they wanted to have a candidate like Gatewood Galbraith on in the future. But in attempting to clamp down even further, accidentally kicked him from ever being able to have participated either. So essentially KET, with their new criteria, the last version adopted July 15th, Gatewood Galbraith wouldn't have qualified, and Gatewood is probably the most successful third-party or independent candidate to run for many years, definitely in my lifetime. And so it's very clear what they're doing here, and it's wrong. Remember, they're publicly funded. It'd be one thing if they were a private corporation. Then it would just be a private organization engaging in, it'd be a private organization that was misinforming the public or misinforming their members. But private organizations don't necessarily have an obligation to do that. But as KET, as a publicly funded institution, and given their mission statement, they should have an obligation to bring the truth to people. And unfortunately, what they're putting out there in the media is not the truth. Let's see here. This was an interesting case. I have to wonder if everybody heard about the incident in Louisville this past weekend, this past week. The Louisville Metro Police Department went into a bar and basically detained everyone in the bar and basically required everyone in the bar to be frisked, saying that, asking, does anybody have anything they shouldn't have? And we're going to search everybody in here. It's an interesting video. The video itself pretty much went viral, and it is definitely a breach of Fourth Amendment rights. Essentially what they said was, well, you're here, so you're guilty until we prove you are innocent, and, that's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And apparently somebody said, what about rights? And the phrase that came back was something to the effect of, the right to shut up. It's amazing. And I do hope that there is some action taken on this, because we certainly don't want to allow the police to engage in such behavior. Now, I've heard the other sides, or parts of the other side of the story, that this particular bar is known as a place where people deal drugs, that this is a bar that has prostitution. Now, understand, every bar I've ever been in and every bar owner I've ever talked to has at some point been accused of being a place where drugs are dealt and that prostitution takes place. And these are places that I know, places that I've gone, and I'm pretty observant to weird behavior. And, I've never seen any of that going down. Not in the bar, anyway. And so these are very common things that are made, accusations that are made. Supposedly the police were acting in conjunction with the ABC, the Alcohol Beverage Control folks, but they wouldn't respond. They made no statement. And we'll see how this develops. But quite honestly, based on the information we have here, the police broke the law. And even if it were the law to allow this, it would be unconstitutional. There was no reason. We're supposed to be secure in our effects and our things without due process. And there was no due process here. There was no warrant. There was no reasonable suspicion. There was nothing to justify this search. Oh, yeah, here's some more fun stuff. State regulators are getting ready to regulate the ride-sharing services. Most people know Uber and Lyft. These are basically the new way to get a taxi. Uber and Lyft are internet applications that you use, and essentially you're technically hiring a private car or some sort of ride-sharing service or whatever. But, you know, and they say that kind of stuff because of the goofy laws around taxi services. But the reality is, and let's be honest here, what this is the new way to get a taxi. It's very popular, technological, it's convenient, and it's clean. Riders can rank their drivers. Riders can, you know, it's all very secure. I talked to one of the people who is a driver. He was actually featured on TV. I talked to him personally about this. And, you know, there's all kinds of protections built into this. There's GPSs involved. There's lots of protections already built into this using technology. And what we're seeing here is the old incumbent industry trying to create regulations, trying to break down something that's a real threat to their old business. And certainly, the telegraph industry would have been more than happy to slap a bunch of regulations on to prevent the telephone industry from taking off way back in the day. But would we have been better for that? Certainly, the old telephone companies would have been more than happy to slap a bunch of regulations to prevent the takeoff of cell phones. And in some ways, they did do some of that. But certainly, you know, the incumbent technology, the incumbent always tries to protect itself from new technology. And certainly, that's understandable. As an organization, you need to protect yourself from competitive threats. But the way you protect yourself from a competitive threat is to provide a superior service, not use the force of government to say, well, you know, we're just going to make that action illegal, and that way we're protected. That's the wrong way. That prevents people from getting better goods and services, what we should be striving toward. You know, it's the wrong direction. And Uber and Lyft have become very popular. You know, we still have an employment problem in this country and in this state. You know, we have a lot of people still out of work. And I don't care. They can count those unemployment numbers till the cows come home. That doesn't mean anything to me. Because when you look, you go out and you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers on the percentage of able-bodied Americans who are actually in the workforce, you can see very clearly that there are, as a percentage, a lower percentage of people are working, period. We're to a level that hasn't been seen since the 1970s. It's kind of a big deal. And so people are trying to find creative ways to make money. And make no mistake, that in the past has been the way that we've driven ourselves out of recessions. It's the little guy who, you know, has nothing else. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? It's finding new ways, new services, new things that you know, are profitable for the little guy, and they benefit society because it's something society wants. Otherwise, they wouldn't make money at it, right? So it's frustrating to me. Yeah, so speaking of the BLS statistics, I'll just bring that up here. We're still sitting right at about 62.8% of able-bodied Americans over the age of 16 are actually in the workforce. And that's the problem. We've been at that level since the first time we hit that level was October of last year. So it's basically been a year that we've been just stuck at 62.8. There's been a couple of fluctuations, a couple little bounces up, but nothing significant, nothing obviously lasting, because we're still at 62.8. And we'll see this go up around Christmas time, or should anyway, with temporary work. But, folks, it's not good. It's just not good. Getting back on track here. The red light camera industry is, I'm trying to figure out where this is here real fast, but it doesn't really matter. There's a place, a small town in Florida is doing a referendum, a petition to end the red light cameras. Thankfully, aren't really in use, at least not where I'm at in Kentucky. I don't know if they're in use in Louisville or Lexington or anywhere else. But red light cameras are revenue, and that's all they are. That's all they are. I understand. I am one who really believes, I really believe that the greatest danger one can have or pose to another driver on the road is to run a stoplight. Right? I mean, I really believe that that is the number, probably the most dangerous thing you can do. Speeding? Yeah, not really. I mean, you're going a direction, you're on the road, whatever. But if you run a traffic signal, that is dangerous. That's what gets people killed. And in you know, many ways, that's what people, you know, they get a green light, they expect that they've got the right-of-way, and a lot of times people don't look. Now, my father always taught me, when you have right-of-way, you look anyway. It doesn't matter. But, you know, you're supposed to have right-of-way, so people just go. And that's what gets people killed. So the idea behind the red light cameras was, hey, we're watching, and we'll catch you, and because this is a really bad thing. We don't want people running red lights. It's really bad. I agree with the premise. The problem is, and they've done lots of studies on this, the thing is the cameras either, A, take the picture at the wrong time, B, another problem is you can't prove who's driving, and that's a big, big problem. C, a lot of times they change the timing on the lights just to cause people to run red lights in order to get more revenue, and that's just disgusting. You're basically putting people's lives at risk on purpose for revenue. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible. There can't be a profit motive in police work. I'm sorry, you can't put a profit motive behind police work because policing for profit will never, ever, ever turn out good. Equation slanted in the wrong direction. Policing should be done at a loss and should be done because it has to be done, not because it makes somebody money. There are certain things in our entire system that need to run that way. Our system shouldn't be about making money for the government. The prison industry is another fine example. No one should be making money off of putting people in prison. The goal should be to keep people out of prison. In fact, I've got a really cool story here that asks a question, and this is actually one of the main things I really wanted to talk about tonight. The story is from the end of August, and the question posed is, should thieves go to jail or pay back the money they stole? And it gets to a question of whether criminal justice should be about punitive action against someone who's done a wrong to someone else, or is it about restitution? And it's funny that this is brought up because I was just having this conversation not 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe a little longer than that, with some folks about criminal justice and what direction should it lean toward. My personal opinion is that our criminal justice system should be all about making the afflicted party whole. Because I'm not really worried about punishing people. My goal isn't to punish people. Goal is to have people leave other people alone. And if they can't leave other people alone, then they need to pay the harm that they do to others. That's my opinion of what our criminal justice system should be about. It should be about restitution. Party whole. Because, man, if you steal $100 from me and then you go to jail, well, great, you went to jail, but I'm still out $100. What good did that do me? Oh, I get the satisfaction of knowing that our criminal justice system has put this person in prison at a cost of whatever thousands of dollars a week for my $100. That doesn't make me feel any better. What we need is a system that says, hey, you afflicted this person. We need to focus more on the civil side of things, I guess is my point. It needs to be more about making the afflicted party whole. I don't care if you go to prison or not. I want my $100 back. Right? If I've had $100 stolen from me, that's what I want. If you've had $100 stolen from you, that's what you want. You want your $100 back. Now, you might be mad, and you might want to have a little extra on there, you know, kind of a penalty, if you will, for causing the problem to begin with. And I could go along with that, I guess. But the main thing is you want to be made whole. And certainly there are cases and times when you can't be made whole. One of those times, for instance, would be murder. Right? If someone's been murdered, there's no making that person whole. They're dead. And so, yeah, at that point, the only option you have is retribution. Punitive retribution for the afflicted party. But that shouldn't be the goal of any, it shouldn't be the goal, it shouldn't be the first place to go. If there's a way to make someone whole, that should be the way our criminal system, our criminal justice system should be geared. And when we get to the bottom of the hour here, after the break, co-host Dave, by the way, will be joining us too. When we get through the bottom of the hour break, I'd really like to hear your calls on this. By the way, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. So I'd really like to talk about this. I mean, if you have a different opinion, if you think whatever your opinion is on it, it doesn't matter. I'm just very interested because I really think our criminal justice system focuses on the wrong thing. And through time, I really think our criminal justice system, while the least defined in our national constitution, is actually the most important branch of government. Because it's what keeps the peace. It's what makes people whole. It's due process. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this after the break. Co-host Dave and others who decide to call in again, 858-683-1326, will get to you after the bottom of the hour break. Oh, let's see. Oh, yeah, more cronyism. Yay. So, this is an entertaining thing. Big Tobacco. Let me frame this for you. So, I have been one who has been fighting the smoking bans for years now, and I've made several appearances on KET in the past. I've, you know, spoken to the local fiscal courts up here in Northern Kentucky. I've written some op-eds, whatever. I've made it very clear I'm against the smoking ban. And as a result, one of the pejoratives that the pro-ban folks throw out is that I'm just a mouthpiece for the no interaction with the tobacco industry whatsoever. My closest interaction would be to my father-in-law who quit farming tobacco like a decade or better ago. Actually, it's been almost 2 decades, I think. Yeah. that's the funny part about this, right? Is that I get accused of being some, you know, lackey. I've been accused of being paid for by Big Tobacco, whatever. That's silly. Well, what's happening now is that of the e-cigarettes, in conjunction with the cigarette ban people, the smoking ban people. Why? Well, of course, it's cronyism. There's the big tobacco companies realized that smoking bans were coming. And they fought them at first, and they didn't care, because after a while they figured out that, you know what, about 20% of the public's going to smoke no matter what. No matter what you do, no matter what you do. And they quit fighting the smoking bans a long, long time ago. They don't care. Yes, smoking nannies, they don't care about you at all. They really don't. Sorry. So now what they've done here in the past few years, we've seen the explosion of the e-cigarette. The e-cigarettes have exploded. I switched to e-cigarettes back May 21st was the last day that I had a cigarette. And I'm not alone. There are lots of people who have made this switch for a number of reasons. The first among them is that it's actually cheaper. At least it is for now. It's cheaper. And on top of that, I feel better. My lungs, I don't cough my lungs out anymore. It's so much better. Are making the switch. Mostly, through word-of-mouth testimonials to other people who smoke. And so now there's a real threat to that 20%. That 20% that big tobacco thought they'd always have. Yeah, there's a threat to that, e-cigarettes. So what's happened is the big tobacco companies went out and they bought some of the companies that were doing the vaporizers, the e-cigarettes. They bought the ones that are known as Cigalikes, and what that means is basically they're the ones that look like cigarettes but have a goofy LED at the end. Usually it like glows green or glows blue. There are some that glow red, but most of them glow a weird color. And they're disposable. And now most of those are owned now by big tobacco companies. Meanwhile, the little guys, the market that can't be controlled by big tobacco, are the refillable e-cigarettes, the ones that you buy juice, you put it in yourself, you have a battery you buy, you have parts that you buy. It's almost like carpentry, and that's the part that I'm a little bit annoyed with the whole thing. But that is the type that I have, and it's the type that I showed on KET earlier this year, and it's the type that really, honestly, is what most people want. They're the ones with the flavors. They're the ones that you can change up, how the experience is. There's lots of reasons why people choose that style, the refillable style. Well, big tobacco, now that they own the Cigalikes, the ones that look like cigarettes, and the smoking ban nannies who hate e-cigarettes completely because they look like smoking, that is their reason. Make no mistake. It looks like smoking. They're offended by anything that looks like smoking. That's why they want it banned. They're coming together to work together to push for a ban on they're pushing for the ban on flavored juices. That's what they call the e-cigarette stuff, the juice. They're pushing for a ban on the juice. They're pushing for a ban on buying it fillable ways. They're pushing for all kinds of bans on everything except the Cigalikes. Now, the pro-ban people, they're pushing everything. But now even Big Tobacco is in on the game here, this ban game, and they're pushing for a ban on everything but the Cigalikes, the ones that they own. And so I have to ask the question, hey, guys, who's doing Big Tobacco's bidding now? Huh? Yeah, that's you. Yeah, that's you. No, the reality is, and they keep pushing this misinformation and disinformation about, oh my gosh, it contains this and contains that, contains this and contains that. The stuff that's in e-cigarettes, folks, is the same thing. It's in your food. It's all food-grade quality stuff. It's no different than when you cook with vegetable oil. It's not a big deal. It's really, really not. It doesn't smell bad. There are lots of reasons why e-cigarettes are better than cigarettes. And they pose a threat to both the old big tobacco companies, the ones that have interest in selling cigarettes, and the new tobacco nannies who just hate anything that looks like smoking. Oh, and also happen to be funded by the companies that, you know, they're the ones that are looking to ban what most consumers of e-cigarettes want. And it really, honestly, has nothing to do with health. Not at all. Oh, sure, they'll point to the increased calls to poison control, but that's temporary. And for crying out loud, of course there are increased calls That's like trying to say there was an increased call. I can't even come up with any product, any chemical, anything. Anything there's more of, there's going to be more calls to poison control. If the thing is in any way poisonous, you're going to have an increase in calls. The increase in calls is caused by the increase in popularity of the product.
Duh.
And these smoking nannies should be pleased to see this because it is money out of Big Tobacco's pocket. And it is fewer people actually smoking cigarettes. They're zealots and it looks like smoking, so they hate it. And all the while, and how this ties into Kentucky, and then we're going to take a break because, wow, I'm over. Steve Beshear, our illustrious Governor Tarkin, right, Beshear, he has signed an executive order to ban smoking in all state properties, but part of that ban also includes chewing tobacco and e-cigarettes. Now, why? Why chewing tobacco? I mean, other than if people, obviously you could ban spitting it out somewhere. I'm cool with that. I don't want to see people spitting on the floor or anything. But, you know, people that swallow it, I think that's gross, but whatever. And e-cigarettes, there is still no proof that they have anything harmful coming out of them for a secondary passive user. They try. They try real hard. There's millions of dollars being spent to try to prove that, and they can't. In fact, there's actually a study that says that e-cigarettes actually improve lung function for former smokers by up to 50% within the first 6 months of switching from tobacco to e-cigarettes, in a study that basically will never see the light of day because if you know anything about how science works these days, folks, you have to pay to play and you have to be part of the in crowd, and it's pay for results. It's all nonsense at this point. Science is so nonsense now. There's no real science. That's why we do the causation correlation thing, because 95% of what you're hearing today is all correlation and it's not causation, and they say X causes Y, but there's no proof that X causes Y, nor could there be. It's stupid, and it drives me crazy, and that's why we do the thing at the beginning of the show. If e-cigarettes cause cancer, then causes motorcycle riders to collide with pedestrians and animals. And on that note, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, co-host Dave and your calls, 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Back in a few minutes.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Try to forget all this mess I'm in. I can stand it. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And if you'd like to call in, now's the time, 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And with no further ado, we'll bring on co-host Dave. Co-host Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Hello, Liberty people.
So we've missed you in the past few weeks. We've been struggling without you. I have to actually, like, talk to myself for a full hour. It's frustrating.
And everybody had to listen to only you for a whole hour.
I know.
They were treated. They were treated to a wonderful treat of just you.
Yeah. Yes. The person who I don't know what was worse. The listeners are for me. But anyway, so welcome back, Dave. I'm glad to have you here. So your thoughts? What do you want to talk about first, man?
Well, you know, I was reminded by a very interesting fact that I learned not long ago. I read somewhere on the interwebs that according to the state of California, smokers in New York expelling their secondhand smoke into the atmosphere cause more lung cancer in Californians than transplants from New York to California get skin cancer from the sun. It's true. I read it on the internet somewhere.
Oh, well, I mean, you read it on the internet. It has to be true. I mean.
And it was according to the state of California.
Oh, well, yes.
Always good.
Yes, well, you know, they are known for the highest level of quality science out there. I mean, you know, or something. Of course, I always say, you know, it's known in the state of California has found that such and such is whatever. I found that the best thing you can do there is just stay away from California, because that obviously is the correlation there, is that California causes all of these problems. It's the common denominator. So, you know, folks, stay out of California.
That's kind of what I thought. I read all of these things that say according to the state of California, and then you fill in the blank, and they're all really horrible things. I'm thinking, wow, yeah, I've come to the same conclusion you have. Stay away from California. But I kind of like California.
Well, you know, the silliest part of that all is that, of course, the state of California, where it's the place where they determined that artificial sweetener saccharin caused cancer, and then later on they went, oops, never mind. You know, the way they do studies on some of this stuff is just silliness and way overboard. You know, if you, my understanding is the saccharin tests, they actually drained rodents of all of their blood and replaced it with a saccharin goo. Surprise, surprise, that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, that's a shock. I can't believe that, you know, we didn't get really good, reliable information from that.
I was equally shocked and dismayed. I couldn't believe.
I'm feeling very silly.
No, it's all good. It's, you know, the problem that you have, you know, is you look at all these studies, all these things that come out that say this causes this, this causes this, but we're still arguing over the same things, too. I mean, it seems like it's like every 6 months we go back and forth on butter versus margarine. I mean, I really do think it's like every 6 months to a year we flip-flop on that. And, you know, I've just always been on the butter side of that argument. I figure the natural stuff's got to be better than the unnatural stuff. But whatever, you know, if you can't even,
I get real frustrated with all these people that try to tell people how to live based on the science of the day. You know, it's like, look, if you can't tell me if butter is good for me or not, or if I should be doing margarine or whatever, if you can't make up, if the scientific community can't make up its mind on something simple like that, you know, there's even bigger questions, things that we know to be true that science technically considers a theory, like the theory of gravity, right? Gravity works because I'm not flying off the planet at you know, high speed. But science still hasn't proven it, and so it's still technically a theory. And it's like, well, wait a second, that's crazy. I mean, we know that it works. So, you know, you have to take these scientific studies with a grain of salt. The scientific method serves a purpose, but at the same time, it's not the end-all be-all. You know, and when you go to extremes like replacing a rodent's blood with all of saccharin juice, it, well, yeah, there's you can prove that that's bad for you. Of course it is. Anything in you know, ridiculous excess is bad. Excess is bad for you.
While we may not be traveling off of the planet at extremely high speeds, we are all traveling through the universe at an exceptionally high speed.
Yes, we are. And in multiple directions. I mean, you got the rotational mass. Oh, yeah. We're moving in multiple axes. I mean, you know, we're moving. We're moving pretty fast. So, but, you know. Go ahead.
Sorry. I do have something that just happened just a few days ago, in fact, about the whole smoking e-cigs and thing. I was talking to a smoker. While we were both smoking, I was smoking a cigar, he was smoking a cigarette, and he was asking me about the e-cigs. He seemed very frightened of them, and his argument against the e-cigs was, well, it's water, putting water in your lungs, you're not supposed to do that, right? And I'm like, well, first of all, it's water vapor, but... And then I just decided to stop and not say anything because, you know, meanwhile, we're outside and the humidity level is 68% in the air.
Right.
And so by the very nature of waking up and breathing, we're breathing water vapor. And he's sitting here inhaling smoke, bringing smoke in his lungs, and he's worried about inhaling water vapor. I had no response. It just stopped.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, the pro-ban side of things, again, those folks funded by the drug companies and whatnot, it put out a whole bunch. I mean, they're really doing a full court press on e-cigarettes right now. You know, and while there may be disreputable sellers out there that would, I mean, every seller I've talked to, they card people. They make sure that people under 18 aren't getting nicotine products or vaping products at all. And, you know, that's why, you know, we passed a law this past session banning the sale of e-cigarettes to those under 18. And no one fought that. Of course not. Because those are kids. You know, there's common sense in all of this. But at the same time, you know, e-cigarettes, I can tell you from personal experience, but at least the immediate effects, I can't tell you what it happens after 60 years of e-cigarettes. I mean, there's no data for that. But I can tell you that, you know, 4 months, 3 months, study I mentioned earlier that, again, will probably never see the light of day. And by the way, I know people who have written studies in that exact same issue, that same problem where you can get a study peer-reviewed, you can get it all the way done, but it'll never get published because it doesn't fit the agenda. The study showed that you have increased lung capacity after 6 months of using e-cigarettes, which probably is a dual function, right? It's probably because, A, you're still doing the breathing thing, which I've seen people on breathing treatments, and exercising your lungs is how you increase your lung capacity. But also because you're not smoking. You're not putting more gunk in there, and your body is breaking down what's already in there. So, I don't know. I personally think that, you can't say it's good for you, but I definitely think you can say it's definitely not as bad as smoking. Based on my limited 3 months of experience, I would, you know, stake a dollar on that. And I don't understand, other than the wild-eyed, crazed hatred of anything that looks like smoking, I don't understand why the band nannies are so hardcore against the e-cigs.
I don't get it either. I don't have an answer for you. You actually just got onto one of my other pet peeves. Yeah, so kid walks into a store to buy an e-cig or a pack of cigarettes, mind you. And now, don't get me wrong, I'm not for underage smoking at all.
Right.
It just boggles my mind that, well, let's use my son as an example. He's 5 years old, walks into a store, buy a pack of cigarettes. He's not going to be allowed. An e-cig, he's not going to be allowed. And he's too young to get carded. It's pretty obvious, but, let's just say for the sake of argument that they somehow, check. You would think that the clerk would. But he walks up to the counter with a bottle of Drano, he's not going to get carded.
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is there are bad products everywhere, that can be abused. Right there, or I shouldn't say bad products. There are regular products that can be abused in any way, shape, or form. Anyway, and we've seen prohibition doesn't work. We've seen that prohibition only leads to drug substitution. We've seen all that stuff. Yet the prohibitionists can't get over themselves, and they can't get over it. It doesn't matter what the data says. It doesn't matter that 100 years of history have proven that prohibition fails every time. That doesn't matter. They're on a moral crusade. Their moral crusade is saving the world from cigarettes, and more importantly to them, saving them from having to see someone with a cigarette.
Man, I got nothing. It's...
I know. So, I don't know, Dave. What else you want to talk about, man? We got like 8 minutes left.
let's see. You were you wanted to talk to people. We were hoping to get opinions from folks on the criminal justice system.
Yeah, the focus of the criminal justice.
How it ought to work. So here's my 2 cents. It's probably closer to a hay penny's worth, but first of all, I don't think that the criminal justice system should even be referred to that way, because is it really, what does criminal justice mean? Are we providing justice for or to criminals or their victims, or like, what's that all about? Shouldn't it just be the justice system? I got hung up on words. We've talked about that a little bit before, but so I don't know. The whole word criminal being in our concept of justice system just kind of rubs me the wrong way. But I do believe in your estimation, about what it, should be all about. We should be trying to make people whole. Victims should be, made whole. That should be number one, if they can be. I'll go a step further in saying that it is punitive. That's the way the system works now. It's punitive. It's only punitive. And frankly, anybody that's studied human behavior on any level knows that punishment does not work. It just doesn't. I don't know what the goal is, but it doesn't work.
Caller, I'm going to bring them on. They want to come on. Caller, taking you cold. Welcome to the show. You're on.
Yeah. Hey, this is John from Cincinnati.
Hey, John.
Well, from Northern Kentucky, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, this is John Crum. My comment is about the science and the e-cig stuff. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. We're waiting on you. Go for it.
Okay, sorry about that.
All good.
I do have a lot of problems with the way that science is done nowadays, but there are also a lot of good things about it that are still going on. And being a part of science right now, you do see a lot of papers that good scientists look at and they say, what is this? These methods don't make any sense. Why are they, like you said, filling a mouths full of saccharin or whatever that study was. You know, good scientists will look at these and say, this is absolute bullcrap. But there are a lot of papers that do get through on bad methods, and those papers are misinterpreted by the media, misinterpreted by people that just want to see the results that they're looking for in some study somewhere. And
yeah,
I think that's the real problem in science, is that we have a lot of information everywhere. Everybody's just sharing everything that they can find. They see something that sounds good, they post it, and somehow it catches fire, and everybody starts believing that. And it's a big problem, and it's bigger than just scientists and distrust of science, because I think there is a lot of distrust in science nowadays.
No, I agree with you. Make no mistake, John. In my heart, I'm a scientist. You know, I like to know why things work. You know, in many ways, that's one of my goals in life, is to figure out how things work. But I get really, really frustrated when I see things that are very obviously politically motivated papers that are funded and then put out in the name of science. And then you're right. It's the parrots in the media that push it everywhere. Oh, my gosh, look, you know, they figured out that e-cigarettes make you grow a third nose or something. I mean, they just come up with crazy stuff sometimes.
No, I agree. Yeah. My thing is that they're
– Go ahead, sorry. No, go ahead, John.
Okay, yeah, my thing is that in order to get fund, okay, the NIH funding is also a problem. There's a fine balance between creativity and incremental science, and we need incremental science. You know, we find something out, we say, oh, this protein does this. We need to learn more about it. We need to learn more about this, and we build off of what was done in the past year or two, and that's incremental science. And that's largely how you get funded nowadays by the government, is through incremental science. You're an old 50, 60-year-old principal investigator. You have been doing this for years, and you're continuing doing what you're doing. You're a safe bet for NIH to fund you. You're not going to go crazy off the wall and just do something dumb. But if you have a genuinely creative idea in order to study something that has not been studied before, you're probably not going to get funded. And so you see these people going out and getting funding from other sources that are even more politically motivated than NIH. And don't even get me started on that. It's bad, too. But you see them going to these, you know, like you said, pro-ban types of groups, or I'm just conjecturing here. I don't know. I haven't seen that, but I would imagine it happens. And so, but what I have read on e-cigs is that the only complaint I found is that they have an increase in emissions in nickel and silver, and that might be because of the way they're manufactured. It might be the certain e-cigs they're testing. So, I mean, there is a lot more to know, but but everything points to them being healthier. So I don't understand the issue with all these bans.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly it. I mean, I'm all about the science, and you know what? If there is an increased risk of something, I'd like to know that. But the problem is that what we're getting is studies that are being funded for political purposes, and the only way you're getting published in a journal these days on the topic of smoking is if you come out with the right answer. You're not going to get published if you come out with something different. The example I gave or started to give before, a friend of mine, for his dissertation for his master's, or excuse me, his doctorate. No, it was his master's. He put together a study that actually showed the economic harm of a smoking ban. And the pro-ban folks like to run around with their little studies that say there's no harm, and there's one in particular here from Kentucky that they love to use. But there's critical pieces of data missing. You know, in that particular scenario, they actually increased last call. It was kind of a trade-off there. They said, all right, you get the smoking ban, but bar owners will throw you a bone, and we'll let you guys stay open and serve alcohol longer. Well, anybody knows, you know, if you're able to be open longer and able to sell alcohol more, then you're going to sell more alcohol. And so there are other factors that weren't put into this paper. It didn't account for all those little factors, and that's bad science. It was done that way on purpose, and they knew that was the case. But they got what they wanted out of it, because then the Kentucky Supreme Court used that as justification to say, hey, look, smoking bans don't cause harm to property, so we can't jump in on the property rights side of things, and so it's all good. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that drives me absolutely crazy, when science is abused to get a political result. And that's my big thing. And I've heard from many people that I've talked to in the past about funding of studies and whatnot, is that if you're not talking something – it seems to be results-based when you're talking about anything that has some sort of political implication. If you're not going to come up with the right answer, they're not going to pay you. And that's a bad, bad, bad thing for science.
It is. It is. And though you also have to look at the journal that it's being published in. Some journals are more concerned about your methods and the statistics you're using, and then others might be a little bit more politically motivated. So that also comes down to how things are interpreted, how papers are interpreted by media, and just the average Joe person that isn't involved in science, just reading papers. Yeah.
Well, and certainly the media doesn't have any clue on that kind of stuff. They just say, oh, look, this got published.
No.
It says that cigarettes are going to kill you. You know, whoopity-doo.
Hey, John.
Yeah. Hey, Diff.
Hey, John, I've got two questions for you. First of all, for us lay folk out here, could you tell us what NIH, the acronym Nancy Indigo Herald, stands for? And secondly, the gear that you got turning here seems like it's got some pretty sharp teeth on it. And you referred to yourself as part of science. So do you work in the field of science, and specifically what field, or are you part of a higher learning institution?
And make it quick.
Well, that Hello?
Make it quick, John. We're running out of time.
Go oh, yeah. National Institute of Health, and I am a part of science. That's a double-edged sword there, because distinguishing between being in academia and being a part of science, that kind of assumes that you can't do science in academia, and that's where a lot of the basic science is done, because like pharmacology, for example, is done in industry, but it's based off of basic science, which is done in academia largely. So I go to University of Cincinnati, and I'm a part of the neuroscience program, PhD program here. So I do right now I'm in an epilepsy lab.
All right. Well, guys, listen.
I didn't mean to. I mean,
it's all good. My
certainly,
laptop,
people that are lay persons, you know, can understand this just as well as anybody else. I'm just, you know, I'm saturated with all this information from science all the time.
Nope, I understand. It's a funny thing. So, but all right. Well, we're running out of time here, and of course, my laptop just froze, and so I can't even shut the show down, which makes that interesting. But. John, I want to thank you for calling in tonight, and Dave, thank you for calling in. Folks, you know, the problem is that with all this, you know, we've talked about the science side of things. You know, the real problem here now is that we have a scenario where you can't trust the media, and that's really what I guess the point is on this. You need to do your own research on a lot of this stuff, and you know, sometimes science comes up with things that don't make sense, things that you know, inherently tell your gut that's wrong. And a lot of times it is because it is wrong. It's something politically motivated. But at the same time, there are other times when science comes up with something that at your gut says is wrong, but they can show it and they can repeat it. It's a repeatable, you know, actual part of science. And so the point, I guess, is that you have to be very careful about where you get your information from, what the information is, and, you know, what you're doing with it. And you know, just question what it is that the motivations might be, the political motivation behind why something may be the way it is. Folks, we're way out of time here, and I apologize, but thank you for tuning into the show tonight. As always, tune in to the other shows on the network. We're here Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m. And until next week, folks, have a good week, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks. Tune in. Have a good night.